One of the avodas, one of the difficult things that we have to do in galus is to try to keep a clarity, to try to keep a presence of mind and an understanding of the differences between the hashkafas that the Torah teaches us and the hashkafas that we, the philosophies, the ideas that we absorb from the society around us. People who grow up in Eretz Yisrael, completely surrounded in a Torah atmosphere, they can trust that their instincts are right. They have good instincts about things. But we grow up, we're getting instincts from two places. We're getting instincts from the Torah, but we're also getting instincts, ideas, attitudes from the world around us. And it's very important sometimes for us to point out differences between the way that we were makabel from the Torah, the way to the attitude and the approach to different things, and the way that the world around us approaches them. I want to talk about today the Torah Hashkafa about the role of women versus and in contrast to the concepts of the emancipation of women, feminism, and so on. The end of Parshas Maaseh, this next week is Matos Maaseh. I'm going to talk about the end of Parshas Maaseh and the beginning of Parshas Matos. The end of Parshas Maaseh, a little-known discussion between the Bnei Yosef and Moshe Rabbeinu. The children of Menashe came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said like this. In Parshas Pinchas, we learned the parasha called Bnei Tzlafchad. Bnei Tzlafchad were the five daughters of Tzlafchad. Tzlafchad had passed away, and he had five daughters. Machla, Naya, Chagla, Milka, and Sirtza. And they were Tzidkaniyos, they were concerned that the method of giving over Yerusha, of inheritance, in Klal Yisrael was that it goes to the son. And if there's no son, so then it goes over to other relatives. But there's no way for a daughter to get a Yerusha. And they were concerned about that, because they wanted to be part of the Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael. They didn't want the Yerusha of their father to go to waste, to go out of the family. So they came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu went to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asked him what to do. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kain b'nai slavcha doivreis, the b'nai slavcha are right. They should get a nachla. And that comes in a large part of Perek Yesh Nachla, and is based on those psukim in Bava Basra, that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu set down the way that Yerusha works is that if a person has sons, his Yerusha goes down to the sons, and then it's the job of the sons to support their sister. But if there are no sons, then the Yerusha goes to the daughters. That's the Seder of the Yerusha of Klal Yisrael. That all was in Parshas Pinchas. In the end of Parshas Maaseh, the Bnei Yosef were concerned. Because we know that when a woman gets married, her husband takes control of her possessions. And he benefits from them as long as they're married. If he dies or he divorces her, so then it goes back to her. But if she dies, then he gets her land. He inherits his wife. So they were concerned if the Bnei Tzlafchad, if all five daughters of Tzlafchad will marry, this one will marry a man from Shevet Reuven, and this one will marry a man from Shevet Shimon, and this one from Shevet Dan, and then as they pass away, when the time comes to leave this world, as they pass away, their lands will start being handed out to the other Shevatim, and the Shevet of Menashe is going to lose land. That was their concern. And they came to Moshe with that concern. So Moshe, through a nevuah of Hashem, said a similar lashon that you find by Tzlafchad in the end of Parshas Maaseh, Perek Lamed Vav Pasukei, Vayitzav Moshe as Bnei Yisrael al pi Hashem Leimar, Kain Matei Bnei Yosef Doivrim, just like Kain Bnei Tzlafchad, so too the Matei of Bnei Yosef, they're speaking correctly. Kain, they're right. Kainim Hadvarim. They're saying is right. It's a good point. And this is what Hashem's tzivoy is to the Bnei Tzlafchad. Zeh Adav Rasher Tziva Hashem le Bnei Tzlafchad. And this pasuk is difficult. Read this pasuk; it's a little bit difficult. It says like this: this is what Hashem says to Moshe: "Latoiv be'einayim tihiyena l'nashim. Marry whoever you want." Now that sounds like they can marry whoever they want, from whichever shevet they want. Ach l'mishpachas matei aviyim tihiyena l'nashim. But you should marry someone who's in your shevet. One second. You start off saying, "I can marry whoever I want." Why didn't the pasuk just say, marry whoever's in you, someone who's in your shevet? And then I'll know that I can marry anyone I want in my shevet. What's the point of saying, marry whoever you want, but it should be in the shevet? What's the point of that? So the Gemara of Baba Basra says, And the Orach Chaim HaKadosh brings it in this pasuk. He brings it into the pshat of the pasuk. The Gemara says that there was a difference. It's a fascinating thing that we have to understand. There's a difference between the way the B'nai Tzlafchot were Nitzstave, the commandment that they were given about how they should marry, and the rest of Klal Yisrael. The rest of Klal Yisrael were told that daughters should marry men in their shevet. That was what they have to do. That's the way the Orach Chaim brings it. To the B'nai Tzlafchot, it says Eitzah Tova. He told them an Eitzah Tova. It's not in every generation, it's just in that door. That's probably what you're it's Bilvad. Because after that, after Yovel, it always goes back to the old person anyway. It's the whole Cheshbon. You can take a look over there. But for that door, this mishpat that you have to marry people in Yeshiva, that doesn't apply to the B'nai Tzlafchot. The B'nai Tzlafchot are given good advice. Eitzah Tova, good advice. We're advising you marry people in your shevet. We're not telling you what to do. We're just advising you to marry people in your shevet. So then the pasuk reads good. It says, "Latoyve einayim tiyed al anashim." Technically, you can marry whoever you want. However, I'm advising you. My advice is, "Lemishpachas matay aviim tiyed al anashim." You should marry someone in your shevet. This is bothersome. Why is it that there was this exclusion of Yoytzim and HaKlal, that the B'nai Tzlafchot, they don't have to marry someone in their Shevet, but they could marry someone in their Shevet. They could, they have the option, they have the advice. And if you read weiter, the Orach Chaim points this out also, the end of the Parashas Maaseh, Pasuk Yud, Parak Lamed Vav Pasuk Yud, it says, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, as Hashem commanded Moshe, Kein Asu B'nai Tzlafchot. That's what the B'nai Tzlafchot did. That's a backwards pasuk. It should have said, Vayasu B'nai Tzlafchot, and the B'nai Tzlafchot did, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. That's what you say. Like it says, what Klal Yisrael did, like Hashem commanded. Vayas Moshe Kasher Dibra Hashem. It says, like Hashem commanded, that's what the B'nai Tzlafchot did. It's a funny pasuk. So that was Zakar Rachaim. Like Hashem commanded that the rest of Klal Yisrael should do, the B'nai Tzlafchot also did that, even though they didn't have to. Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, Kein Asu B'nai Tzlafchot. That's what the B'nai Tzlafchot did. Two questions that come out of this. First of all, Taka, what's the pshat? What's the pshat that the B'nai Tzlafchot that this special did that they don't have to marry husbands from their shevet? They're allowed to go out, but they listened anyway to the regular, the general rule. And secondly, and this gets more into the cloudiness of what's going on over here, the Medrash learns from the B'nai Tzlafchot. The Medrash says like this: the men said Nitna Roish V'Noshuva Mitzrayim. The men said, "Let's go back to Mitzrayim," when things got tough. The women said, "We want to have a Yerusha in Eretz Yisrael." Zok the Gemara, you see, Zok the Medrash, Rabbi Abachaya brings it, and others. Zok the Medrash, you see from here, Noshim Mechavavois Es Haaretz. Women have a special love for Eretz Yisrael. The men were ready to say, "Forget about Eretz Yisrael, let's go back home," what they considered home. The women would say, "No, we want to go to Eretz Yisrael." I just want to point out as a footnote that according to some shitas, the father, this Tzlafchot, was one of the Ma'apilim, was one of the people that after Hashem said, "Don't go up to Eretz Yisrael," he wanted to go anyway. So they did have a little bit in their blood, this special love of Eretz Yisrael, that they were ready to even defy Hashem's orders to run to Eretz Yisrael. There it was wrong. But sometimes a midah that's wrong, if it falls into the right way, could be used right. But the Medrash says, the Medrash says from this, Nashim Mechavavai says Haaretz. I want to understand what the special relationship is between women and Eretz Yisrael. That's Parshas Maaseh. Now let's turn to Parshas Matis. Beginning of Parshas Matis, we already read yesterday by Mincha. Beginning of Parshas Matis talks about Nedarim. A neder means that a person, that we have 613 mitzvahs, and that's obligations that we have. However, if a person wants, a person can create new isurim on himself. A person can say that this piece of challah should be usher to me like hektish, and it becomes usher. He creates a new isur on himself. That's the parasha of nedarim. Now within the parasha of nedarim, there's special halachas that pertain to women. And that's the parasha of hafaras nedarim. There's a parasha in the parasha of Nedarim that says that if someone's wife makes a neder that he feels like would be detrimental, he has the right to abolish that neder. Similarly, if someone's daughter makes a neder that he considers detrimental, he has the right to be mefer means to abolish, to destroy that neder. He has the ability to be mefer that neder as well. It It's not like Hataras Adarim that we do, that you need a chacham and a reason. You don't need anything. The husband could just say, Mufralach, Mufralach, Mufralach. There's no neder anymore. Okay, it's long sugi is exactly what types of nedarim and so on, but that's the general idea. And that's one of the halachas in the parasha of nedarim. We're not going to talk about today the meaning of that specific halacha, but that's one of the halachas. What's very interesting and difficult to understand is that you have all the halachas of neder, ishki yidur neder lashem, and then a woman, and then the halachas of the father, and hafaras nedarim, but this is the parasha of nedarim and the Torah. And it ends off like this. Perek Lamed Pasuk Yizayin, the last pasuk of Perek Lamed. Eile hachukim, these are the rules, the laws. Asher tziva Hashem es Moshe, that Hashem commanded Moshe, bein ish le ishtoi, between a husband and his wife, bein ov levitoi, between a father and his daughter. There's more over here. That's the whole thing, that's the whole parasha of Nedarim. What about the bein adam la'atzmai? What about the parasha of Neder? You say a parasha of Nedarim. There's a parasha of Nedarim. A person who makes a Neder has to keep the Neder. If your wife makes a Neder, you can be made for the Neder. If your daughter makes a Neder, you can be made for the Neder. These are the halachas about your wife and your daughter. What's that? You forgot the first pasuk? The first pasuk says about Nedarim. What's going on over here? Okay. It's a concept, I think we've mentioned it in different ways in the past, but a very, very important concept. Our life is divided up into two parts. There's mitzvahs, obligations, responsibilities, and then there's divrei rishus. There's the areas where there aren't specific mitzvahs. For example, we have to daven in the morning, but we don't have to eat breakfast. Eating breakfast is a divrei rishus. We can eat breakfast. We're allowed to eat. We're permitted to eat breakfast. Maybe we're encouraged to eat breakfast, but we don't have to. It's not a mitzvah. But we have to daven. That's chiyuv and that's divrei rishus. On Shabbos, there are many things we have to do on Shabbos. We have to eat, make kiddush. We have to eat a suda. But the extent of our suda and the extent of our ending Shabbos, that's really a little, each person to his own decision, his own idea. And so on, much of life is divided up between these two areas. There's divrei kedusha, ruchnias, and then there's divrei rishus. People like to call it the gray area. I don't like calling it anything gray, but it's that area where you don't have specific halachas in Shulchan Aruch about. There aren't specific halachas in Shulchan Aruch. Which school should you send your kids to, if you would have a choice? Which school should you send your kids to? So, there's no mitzvah. You can't look up in Shulchan Aruch which school. You have to kind of use your intuition, your idea. It's within the realm of divrei rishus. However, and this is the mashal that I just said is the biggest riot to this point. However, divrei rishus doesn't mean that there's no responsibility to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For example, is this idea. I'm eating a Shabbos Suda. How much of an enjoyable Suda should I bake it? That could be a very spiritual decision. It could be a decision to make my Shabbos Suda within the spirit of Shabbos, or less in the spirit of Shabbos. Even though there's no specific halacha in Shulchan Aruch commanding me to do certain things. Or which school should I send my kids to? Or which friends should I introduce my kids to? Or what type of hobby should I have? How should I spend my free time? These are things that someone who serves Hashem properly realizes that there's a Ratzon Hashem in those things also. Hashem has an agenda over there also. How I spend my free time, how I mechanech my family, what school I send my children to, all the areas that we would put into divrei rishus really are also divrei kedusha. Because our whole life has to be a reflection of what Hashem wants. But certain things we have direct instructions from Hashem, daven shachris, direct instruction. I don't have a suffix about it. But about breakfast, it doesn't say eat breakfast. So then I have to decide. If I eat breakfast, I'll have strength to serve Hashem properly over the day. Maybe there's a problem with a hechsher on something, so maybe that I shouldn't eat. It gets involved in the divrei rishus. Maybe the people I'm eating with aren't the right company. Maybe the people I'm eating with are specifically gevaldik company. It'll have a good effect on me. 1,000 different cheshvonos in a meal that you could have in a meal that's divrei rishus, but also has to be mechuvan towards what Hashem wants in any area. Now, if you think about it for a minute, if I have two decisions that I made during the day, the first decision I made that I was going to daven shacharis, I made that decision. And then I made a decision when I had a choice, where should I take my kids today, I made a decision to take my kids to a place that I thought would be overall better for them spiritually. There's no halacha and shulchan aruch about it. There's no dinim about it. Doesn't say anything. There's no yisurim in either place. But just the atmosphere was a place that I thought would be better for their ruchnias. Which decision is a more special decision on my part? So to an extent, when I decided to daven shacharis, that's a much holier thing. But if you think about it carefully, which one reflects that I understand what Hashem wants from me? Not davening shacharis, that I don't have to understand anything. It says a shofar to daven shacharis, I daven shacharis. That intuition, that I understand what Hashem wants from me. I understand what the goal is over here. That helps me make decisions in that area that's not a shulchan aruch to make the decisions properly. L'mashal, if I tell my son, please bring me a cup of water. So he brings me a cup of water. Or if he walks over to me one day and he says, you know, you look thirsty, here's a cup of water. Which is a more special response from a child? Definitely the more special, the father is more touched. Not that the son followed his orders, that's also good. But that the son was able to understand that this is what the father wants and would appreciate. That's a much more special decision. So if we think about it, the ability to listen to Hashem in tzivuyim, maybe on a level of ruchni is higher, davening shacharis, learning Torah, being mekayem mitzvahs, but in terms of what it says about me, divrei reshus mechuvin keneged ratzon Hashem, where should I live and what should I do and who should I be friends with, and all these things are much more of a reflection of my connection to Hashem. It's a very important yisod. Gemara Chulin says like this, Hashem created the world, and he told the trees that they should not grow haphazardly. They should grow according to their species. Orange trees should create orange trees. The seeds from orange trees should create orange trees. The seeds from apple trees should create apple trees. They should grow liminehem. That's what he told the trees. He didn't tell that to the grass. There's many, many different kinds of grasses. If you've been to Home Depot, you know that. There's many, many different kinds of grasses. And Hashem did not tell the grasses to grow according to their species. He didn't tell them. The Gemara says, whatever this means, nasu, the Dishayim will nasu kal v'chaymer la'atzman. They made a kal v'chaymer for themselves. They said, if Hashem said that the trees should grow l'mineim, we should also grow according to our species. And when they made that decision, so it says that the Sar Ha'olam, one of the biggest malachim, opened his mouth and he said, Yihi chavayid Hashem la'olam, Hashem's honor will be forever. Yismach Hashem b'masav, Hashem has simcha from his creation. What's the meaning of that Gemara? Exactly what we're talking about now. When Hashem tells the trees, do this and they do that, that's not where Hashem gets nachas from his creation. They didn't have a choice. Hashem told them this is what they should do. But when the grass says, oh, I see that the ratzon Hashem is that we should not be mixed around, that we should grow in an orderly fashion. I see that that's the ratzon Hashem. That's what Hashem wants. He didn't tell it to me, but I see that he told it to the tree, so I see that that's what he wants. Let's do that also, on our own. Let's understand to do that also. Whatever it means that the grass made that decision. But let's do that also. That's Yismach Hashem b'masav. That Hashem has nachas from. That the creation, the Bria, understands the Ratzon Hashem, even when they're not under direct orders. We went through this one time when we were talking about Eretz Yisrael and the Midbar. It's a good mashal to say again. Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar. They had no many mitzvahs they didn't even have. They didn't plant, they didn't plow, they didn't eat regular food. They didn't have a mundane life at all. They lived a life in Anane HaKavod, in the clouds. They were learning Yom HaVelayla. They had Nevuah, constant Nisim. They lived not in Minayishav. They didn't live in a regular country. They didn't have to make treaties. They didn't have, the few times they had interactions with other nations we see in the Torah, in 40 years, maybe three times that they had any type of interaction with other countries. They sat for 40 years in the desert. Like almost like Hashem picked them up from this world and put them into a different world for 40 years. Going into Eretz Yisrael, however, was a totally different thing. Going into Eretz Yisrael demanded that they be a king, building bridges, making treaties, wars, taxes, houses, fields, parnasa, v'yosafta d'ganecha, v'sirosh chavitzarecha. Life, mundane life. To a certain extent, the Midbar represents the part of our life that's ruchnias. Daven shacharis, I'll daven shacharis. Learn Torah, I'm learning Torah. Do a mitzvah, I'm doing mitzvahs. Eretz Yisrael is a life of ruchnias. Also, it's a heilige land. It's a life of ruchnias, that demands that I take my ruchnius and I inject it into a more mundane life, and I make it not mundane anymore. I plant the way Hashem says, and I plow with the attitude that Hashem wants me to plow. And when I cut the produce and I bring it home, I don't say, oh, look how great I am, I had a good crop. I thank Hashem for it. The attitudes of ruchnius and a gashmiistic life. When I make a treaty with Goyim, I do it in a way that it's a kiddush Hashem. When I decide to go to war, I decide if it's going to be the right thing. When I charge taxes, I don't charge taxes because I want to fill my own bank account, but because I want to do l'tayva satzibur, and so on and so forth. Regular mundane life, chay life, injected with kedusha. That's Eretz Yisrael. This is the difference between men and women. This is what the Sfarim teach us, and Gedolim have taught us. This is the difference between men and women. The Maral says something that's very insulting to women, and people don't like to say it around women. The Maral says that men have to do with ruchnius, spirituality. Women are gashmiim, they're physical. And it's very difficult to understand. We don't understand what that means. First of all, it's not true. There are many very spiritual women, there are many very physical men. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes the man is the more physical and the woman is the more spiritual. What does it mean that women are more physical? According to what we're saying, the trap comes out. We're not making a ladder over here and we're saying men are on top and women are on the bottom. That's not what we're saying. We're saying the talent of men, the area where a man has the ability to succeed, is in bringing ruchnius, in being involved in ruchnius. The man has all the mitzvahs. He doesn't have any peturim. He has to sit in the sukkah, and he has to blow shofar, and he has to listen to Parashat Zachar, and he has to do all the mitzvahs, even the mitzvahs of Zeishah Azman Grama. The man has the chiyavi gisim b'yom v'layla. He has to learn Torah as much as he can. The man has to be involved in ruchnius, involved in spirituality. That's the talent, and he sets the tone in a household, or anywhere. He sets the tone by bringing the spirituality into the house. The woman has a different job. The woman, she runs the house. Generally, again, there's no absolutes, and there's no, and men have to have the midas of women, and women also have to have the midas of men. This is a generalization about the general strengths of each one. I don't mean to become petty over here. It's a general, when Hashem gave a different midah to men and a different midah to women, this is an explanation of those midas. Women, generally, like the Gemara says, Beisai Zuishtai, the house is his wife. Women run the house. Women arrange play dates with their kids. Women are doing homework with their kids. Again, there's no absolutes, I'm just saying as a rule. They're involved in the house. She lights the neiros Friday night because the Mishnah says because it's her house. She's in charge of the mili debesa, of the inyanim of the house. So does that mean she's not as special as the man who goes out to learn and daven's with a minyan and spends the whole day in shul on Yom Kippur while the woman's taking care of the kids the whole day? No, adarabba. The woman has an unbelievable, unbelievable job and an unbelievable capacity. She's able to live in a mundane world with a mundane life and be mechavin and direct every single part of that to fit with the Ratzon Hashem, with what Hashem wants. That's the talent of a woman. The intuition, the chachmas nashim, the intuition of women that men don't have, is the ability to take the ideas of ruchnius, the hashkafa, the philosophy, the morals, the lessons of the Torah, where there's no halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and she says, I don't feel right about this, I don't feel right about that friend, I don't think that's the right attitude, I don't think we should be doing this. When the husband gives 10 excuses why he's not doing something, the wife is going to say those are excuses. The intuition. Being mechavein divrei rishus kefi the ratzon Hashem. That's the power of a woman. Bringing in divrei kedusha, bringing in the actual spirituality, that's the power of a man. That's the difference between an isha and an isha. So if we had to look at the midbar in Eretz Yisrael, we would say the man represents the midbar, living a life of ruchnius, relatively speaking. He's damas with a minyan, he spends his time learning. Relatively speaking, he's in the midbar. The woman is Eretz Yisrael. She plants and plows and figuratively, she's involved with the world, she's involved with more outside people, she's talking to her neighbor, she's on the phone, she's doing the laundry, she's involved with many, many more different, more mundane looking things, and her job and her talent is that she's able to be mechaven those things, kefi the ratzon Hashem. That's Eretz Yisrael. That's what we mean when we say that Nashim Bechavavayis Osaretz, women have a special love for Eretz Yisrael. Because the concept of Eretz Yisrael, which is taking a mundane life and sanctifying it, That's what women are good at. That's what's special about women. They know how to take mundane and sanctify it. She's a good cook, so she makes a Shabbos special. She's good with children, so she's mechanech them to serve Hashem properly. To take the mundane and to be mechavin it towards the Ratzon Hashem. That's the talent that an Isha has. The concept of Eina Mitzvah V'Oisa. You don't have to do it, but you could do it. That applies to women. Women don't have to sit in the sukkah. Everybody knows. Women are potter from sukkah. They can sit in the sukkah. Women don't have to shake a lulav. If they do, according to our shita, at least, it's not so, there's discussion about it, but according to our shita, she makes a bracha on the esrogim lulav. She's able to be mekayim the mitzvah, but she doesn't have to. That's a reflection of this concept. Hashem says, I'm not telling you what to do. You have the intuition to understand what to do. The man, it's an incredible thing, the man needs to be told what to do. The woman has the intuition to understand what to do. So there's less mitzvahs that she's obligated in than a man. She's not on a lower level that she's obligated less. She has a different capacity. She's able to understand and be mechavin with her intuition and with her wisdom to do what Hashem wants without being specifically told. So the B'nai Slachad, you have a B'nai Slachad, they decided that they want a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Why is that the Medrash? Because they love Eretz Yisrael, because there's something about Eretz Yisrael that speaks to a woman. The idea of planting and plowing, but it's something that Hashem has nachas from. That's something that speaks to a woman, and therefore the B'nai Slachad don't want to give up Eretz Yisrael. So when Hashem gives them Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem instructs them that they should marry people within their shevet, so that the land stays in their family, it's Eina Mitzvah V'Oisa. Everyone else gets the tzivoy. You have to do it. But the B'nai Slachot who expressed their love of Eretz Yisrael, you expressed your love for sanctifying where I didn't command you. So I'm not going to command you how to act. I'm going to give you advice, but you're going to figure out for yourself what the right way is. Eina mitzvah v'oisa. So in the love of Eretz Yisrael that they had, and in the land that they were given because of their love of Eretz Yisrael, Hashem's not telling them what to do. No, because they have that intuition, they'll know what to do. And Taka the Pasuk says, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, what Hashem told Moshe to tell the rest of Klal Yisrael, Kein Asu B'nai Slachot. The B'nai Slachot by themselves understood that that was the right thing for them to do, and that's what they did. A neder, what's a neder? A neder is the same thing. This challah is mutter to me. I can eat it. It's very shush. I can eat it if I want. I can not eat it if I want. When I decide that the right thing for my avodas Hashem is to make this usher to me, to make this like a carbon, I'm making this usher to me for 30 days so that I can grow in spirituality and for whatever other reasons. That's me taking very shush. I'm taking the area where there's no mitzvah and I'm sanctifying. I'm sanctifying an area of my life where there is no kedusha before. What you eat, what you wear, where you go, there's no tzivui, it doesn't say in the Shulchan Aruch, but the nether is sanctifying the Divrei Rishus. It's not a carbon, but you could make it into a carbon, sanctifying the Divrei Rishus. So when the Pasuk sums up the Parsha of Nedarim, it sums it up by talking about the aspects of Nedarim that have to do with Nashim. Because the whole Parsha of Nedarim is really the talent that Nashim have. So that's the Hadgasha, that's what the Pasuk stresses. Eila ha'chukam asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Sure, it includes Nedarim that have to do with men also. But the Pasuk wants us to focus on the Nashim, because that's their talent. The talent of an Isha is that she could take Divrei Rishus and be Mekadosh, bein Ish le'ishtay, bein Av le'bitay. Someone once told me, a couple of years ago, someone told me an incredible thing based on this concept. The Maral says that the word ben, the word a person's son, is a lashon of binyan, it's a lashon of building, because a person is part of the binyan of a person, his children are part of his binyan, it's a lashon of binyan. The word bas is not a lashon of binyan, but the Maral says that it is a lashon of binyan, it is a lashon of building, because in Aramaic, a daughter is binas, and binas is a lashon of binyan, also beis nun, the lashon of binyan. So a son is a lashon of building in Hebrew, and a daughter is a lashon of building in Aramaic. That's this concept. Hebrew is inherently holy. So that's the binyan of a ben. That's the talent of a husband. Aramaic is a lashon of chayil that has kedusha because it's used for divrei Torah. That's the lashon of a bas. That's the chashivas of a daughter. it's true that there's things in Aramaic that were given me Sinai, but the Gro, this is a Gro that says that we look at Aramaic as a Lashon of Chayil that received Kedusha, because it existed as a Lashon of Chayil before it had Kedusha, and Lashon Kodesh is inherently Kodesh, just Lashon HaKodesh, it's inherently Kodesh. Which brings us to one of the most scary things when someone moves out of town and he has to deal with a modern community and so on and so forth, or he becomes a rabbi somewhere out of town or something. One of the stickiest, most difficult things for him is that there's a bracha, Birchas HaShachar, that's very denigrating to women. And many women carry this as a banner of what they don't like about Orthodoxy. Men say every morning, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, I thank you, Hashem. I recognize your bracha, you were so good to me that you didn't make me a woman. And women have this pathetic, poor excuse of a bracha, it sounds like. They say, thanks to Hashem, she'asani kirtzaynei, that you made me like you wanted me. Sure, I'm not a man, but, you know, them's the breaks, you know. At least I'm a woman, I could have been an animal or something. Hashem made me a woman, that's also good. Sounds terrible. And it's something that was so hurtful to people who were not Talmid HaChamim, that the conservative movement, and I've seen that we when we got this building, that we were blessed to find many conservative siddurim in the building, and I privately went through one of them. And in one of the differences between a conservative davening and the Orthodox davening is that the men say she'osani ish, thank you Hashem for making me a man. They don't say for not making me a woman. And the women say baruch atah Hashem l'kenu she'osani isha, that you made me a woman. Not this pathetic that you made me how you want. No! You made me a woman. Women are special too. And without any understanding, we have to stop for a minute and point out what a chutzpah that is. Our whole Yiddishkeit comes because we had chacham and we had sages, we had chazal. And these chazal were on a higher level than we could possibly imagine. There's no way that we could possibly imagine the level, the spirituality, the purity, the wisdom of these men. And the Ashkenaz Zagdalu was 120 chachamim. Umehem neviim. Some of them were prophets. Some of them were neviim. And they said, they gave us a nusach hatfilah. And for people to come across, whenever it was in the 1800s, whenever it was, people to come across and say, you know what, it just doesn't reflect the times, and just change it. It's like, what would someone say today, and this is not even such a bad idea sometimes, if people go to the Smithsonian, whatever it is, take the Declaration of Independence, or take the Constitution, take a scissor, cut out some words, and put in other words that fit better with today's times. Even America would be up in arms about that. And that was just 200 years ago. A bunch of Goyim got together. Maybe they were very, very intelligent. Some of them were extremely intelligent. But a bunch of Goyim got together. Each of them with history as proven had their own problems. A bunch of Goyim got together and made a constitution. And it's an incredible document. And a country lasted so long with such a government. It's an incredibly wise document, the constitution. Incredibly wise document. But you know, times change. You know, they weren't so smart. Let's cut out some words. Okay, they have amendments. That's already shtickle pagia, but let's cut out some words. You know, let's change some things. Let's say certain things in the Constitution aren't relevant anymore. No, we can't do that. Founding fathers. That's founding fathers. It's 200 years ago. Nobody says that they were on any kind of moral level or holiness level. That's not. We just say that they were smart. What do you say about chachamim going back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years? A different world, a different type of a person, a different type of a shalim, a different level of what a human being could possibly be, without a selfish bone in their body, given over completely to the Ratzon Hashem, able to perceive, to get Ruach HaKodesh, to have a divine inspiration, to have Nevuah. You're going to take a scissor, cut out of the scissor the words Shasani Kirtzani because you don't understand it? Just the chutzpah without understanding it is astounding. We have to realize it's astounding chutzpah. It's a bizayon to our history. That being said, let's try to understand it though. According to what we said, it's an amazing thing. The man says Shalayasani Isha because the job of a woman is to be involved in the mundane world. Men don't have the talents to be involved in that world as much as women do. Don't have the intuition, Aleph. And men have the Hana, the pleasure, the privilege of being involved in spirituality, which is a wonderful thing, a tremendous privilege. Therefore, we thank Hashem that He didn't make us a woman and throw us out into Olam Hazeh. No, we get to daven 3 times a day. We get to shake a lulav and to sit in a sukkah and to eat matzah, and to, well, women have to eat matzah too, and to learn Torah as yomim v'layla, to sink ourselves into ruchni. It's a beautiful, beautiful life. But women have a different, unbelievable role in the world, and that is that they were given the ability to understand the Ratzon Hashem, to understand what Hashem's will is. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, She'osani, that You made me kirtzayinai, like Your will. You made me, You gave me the ability to understand Your will. You gave me the intuition, the wisdom, the knowledge, the understanding, kirtzayinai, that I could live my life according to Your will. I should stop. Women should stop saying that. Women should stop. That's what's special about women. She'osani isha, what does that say? She'osani kirtzayinai. You made me a reflection of Your ratzon. A man can't say, You made me a reflection of Your ratzon. We're given orders. We follow Shulchan Aruch, we're given orders. A woman could say, You made me a reflection of Your will. She'osani kirtzayinai. What a privilege. What a schus to be able to say that. And the foolish people who didn't trust Chazal, their wives and their women with their talis and tefillin and all, lose out on saying this bracha that says what's special about women. And their whole lives they never get to thank Hashem for giving them what's special about women. In their haste to defend women, they've actually insulted them on a grand scale. It's an incredible thing. Which brings us to feminism. And this is the point I think is important. We live in a society today that women in the workforce and women in politics and so on, we have a woman governor now, where we try to treat women equal to men. And there's different aspects of this, and I'm not going into all of them now. I just want to point out one thing. The way we've been learning now, this is something that the Sfarim are full of. Hashem gave men certain talents, and Hashem gave women certain talents. If you take a woman and you make her act like a man, you're making her lose her talents. You're putting her into a world where she can't function to her fullest level. Why is that being fair to her? Why is it fair to women to take them away from where they're special? Women can run a household far better than we can. Women can raise children far more successfully than we can, as a rule. So to take them away from that job, that's embarrassing them, that's humiliating them, that's not being fair to them. Women's rights should be, allow us to have our role. Not that we should be the same as men. We have to do whatever a man could do, women could do the same thing. And if you think about it, so they have races for men, and they have races for women, they don't have the same expectations for women, because women aren't as strong as men. Well, in many areas, if you think of swimming, all the different areas, the fact is that men are physically stronger. So when you have Olympics or teams or whatever it is, they have women, they can't have the women and men together because it's not fair. So women just have lower expectations. Oh, that's really beautiful. That's really putting women on a pedestal. That's a bizayin. Why don't men do the things, men have more physical strength, let men run races. Let women do the things that they're good at. And let them be number one, not number two. It's just a backwards hashkafa, it's a non-thinking hashkafa. And it seeps in sometimes to us. We're honoring women by giving them a different role than men. We're honoring them. And nobody could do it like we can, and we have to appreciate it. We have to tell the women that are in our families and in our lives, we have to tell them that we appreciate the unique role that they have. And we have to be mechanech our daughters. We have to teach our daughters not that they're second best, but they're okay also. But that is a special role. Someone told me, a woman once told me that she grew up feeling very, very, very second class to men. The men have all the fun and so on and so on. So the frum girl, and especially she said, on Purim, the men are running around, shalachmanis, they're shikr, they're running around the yeshiva, this, that. And she's just sitting home with her mother, doing nothing. This like attitude like sunk into her a little bit. That, you know, the men are out there having all the fun, the women have to stay home. There's a chisaron in that chinuch. There's a chisaron in that chinuch. In my house, so my wife makes challah, almost every week she makes challah, and she's able to do the mitzvah of challah, and that's a very special mitzvah. And I once saw in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch of Chacham of Adi Yosef, he has a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch for Sfaradim. My wife was teaching Sfaradim at the time, so we bought some of the Sfaradim for Sfaradim, so she shouldn't teach them the wrong halachas. So in there, in Hilchas Chal, so she was teaching Hilchas Chal because they were doing a Shabbos semester about Shabbos. So she was teaching Hilchas Chal, and in there, it said that a man should also once a year do the mitzvah of Chal. I was intrigued by that. I never get to do the mitzvah of Chal. So when I spoke to my Rosh Hashiva next, I said, you know, I saw in the Sefer that says that he said you should ask your wife for shus. It would be a good idea to ask your wife for shus if once a year she'll allow you, even though it's her mitzvah, if she'll allow you to get the mitzvah. So we try around El time, usually around Rosh Hashanah time. I ask my wife if she'll be masking 1 week to give up the decha, to give up that special mitzvah that she has. I think there's a lesson in that to my wife, just as much as there is to me. And I hope my daughter is listening too when I say that. It's a recognition that I have things in my life that are special, learning mitzvahs, the things that are special, men, and you have things that are special that I'm jealous of you about. It's yours, chus. You don't have to stay home. You get to stay home. And you're better at it than I am, and I could never do it like you can. Because you can do things that I can't do. You can understand things and grasp things and have an intuition of things that I can't have. I feel like that's honoring women. Not telling them you could be the same as me. That's just one example, just to come back to where we started, one example of the sensitivity that we have to have when we're in Golis. We're in there 3 weeks now, to be sensitive to Golis. Not to take every hashkafa we receive from the outside world for granted, even if it sounds right. We have to see, is it reflected in what the Torah teaches us?